Politics, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
It is Monday, July 30th. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Andre Holgate. Thank you for joining us on today's Capital City Recap. I'll be joined by a professor of religion who's written a book titled, Was Jesus Muslim? We'll get the answer to that question and find out how he came to his conclusions. And the Michigan State University School of Business offering a new MBA program on business analytics. What is it? And just how well are MSU business grads doing in this tough job market? I'll be joined by the director of that new program to tell me all about it. But first, Vice President Joe Biden in Michigan this past weekend for the American Federation of Teachers annual convention in Detroit at Cobo Hall. Biden saying the teachers are under a, quote, full-blown attack from Republicans, although are proposed changes to our education system really that, or just long overdue upgrades that will bring more options to parents and students? To talk about it, I'm joined by the president of the American Federation of Teachers Michigan, David Hecker. David, thank you very much for joining us on WILS.
Thanks for asking. It's great to be on.
Now, just for some numbers, compare, I know the AFT is the second largest teachers union right behind the National Education Association nationwide and in Michigan. How do the two unions compare in terms of numbers?
The nationwide, the American Federation of Teachers has a little over 1.5 million members. I'm not quite sure where the NEA is at, but it is larger than that. The NEA is probably about 2.5 million. And in Michigan, we have 35,000 members. The NEA, the MBA, I don't know their exact numbers. They're right. Probably 130,000 or so. We are the largest higher education union in the country, though, and the largest higher education union in the state. But the Education Association is larger.
In terms of the agenda, do the two unions coordinate in terms of the agenda they're pursuing? Are there any real differences between what the two unions are looking to have happen?
There are not very many differences. The two unions talk all the time at the national level and here at the state level. In fact, tomorrow I'll be speaking at a Michigan Education Association function. I appreciate that invite. We're 99% on the same page because we believe in the same thing. We believe in a quality pre-K 16 public education system and that all children have the opportunity to attend, and we fight to continue to enhance public education, and we fight to continue to have the women and men who educate our students be treated with respect.
Well, the vice president talks about this attack on teachers, but shouldn't the focus really be on the students and their parents, expanding the options with things like charter schools and cyber schools, rather than trying to protect the status quo, as some critics of this teachers union say is happening here?
Well, the only people who say that the teacher unions protect the status quo are the critics of the teacher unions, because we're the last ones to protect the status quo. Teacher unions had been advocating for meaningful school reform long before elected officials had stood up and done that. But when teachers in Michigan can no longer bargain evaluation procedures, so they're whatever the administration wants, and we know from history that their fly-by-night evaluation systems, rather than evaluation systems that help teachers improve, it directly helps the student if we have real, meaningful evaluation systems that we support, and we should be able to collectively bargain to improve
them. Are you saying, though, that the current testing structure, which some say applies pressure on teachers and schools to pursue improvements, the changes in the testings we've seen since the No Child Left Behind program took effect, are you saying those are ineffective or completely ineffective?
There is, concerning testing, there is much, much too much of a stress on standardized tests in Michigan and in this country. As a matter of fact, we passed a resolution at our convention called Testing Should Inform, Not Impede Teaching and Learning. There's a role for standardized tests, and the purpose of standardized tests is not how you judge a teacher or how you completely judge a student. It's intent is diagnostic. It tells the teacher, tells the student, tells the parents of the student where the child is at, and therefore we know where we need to go to help the child improve.
Yeah, but for districts,
unfortunately, standardized tests have been become high stakes tests that forces teachers to teach to the test rather than teach in the best way for our students.
See, in districts that are failing year after year, other than incentivizing test results and looking and demanding improvements in test results, how else do you begin to change something that may have been a problem for many years in some of these districts?
Well, again, you know, the last people who support the status quo are the American Federation of Teachers and the Michigan Education Association. We've been fighting, for example, for lower class size, because all the research shows and common sense tells you a smaller class, better connection teacher-student, better for the teacher to learn. We've been lobbying that every school has the kind of upgraded technology in this day and age that some of our better-off community public schools have. We've been working hard to have meaningful professional development for teachers, not just you bring in someone to lecture to teachers, but meaningful professional development like the American Federation of Teachers offers itself. And we also fight for national health care,
right,
for real jobs programs, and those things are extremely, extremely important. Because everything that impacts a child's education just doesn't take place in the four walls of a school. It's impacted by the child's entire life.
But
and if everybody had a good-paying job, a decent job,
sure,
that could provide for their family,
yeah,
and everybody had health care, and everybody could have a nice, solid middle-class life, research tells you, you would see student performance excel.
But what about students that are now in failing schools? Their parents look at a situation that they've got a few years for their students or their children to get their education. They can't wait 5 to 10 years for institutional changes to occur. Why shouldn't they have these options that are now being proposed here in Michigan, even with reforms to our school finance system, to allow them to go to different districts, to go to charters in an easier way than is now occurring?
Well, they have those options now. There's no a parent in any school district could send their child to another public school district. There is no cap anymore on the number of charter schools. So all those options are open now. There's tremendous choice in public education in Michigan.
So you're saying this panel that was arranged by the governor to update the finance system for K-12 education, that you don't have any problem with some of the considerations that they're now looking at to move beyond the current structure that's been in place for several decades?
Well, if there's any move to a school voucher system that the state of Michigan voted down 10 years ago by an overwhelming vote of 2-1, a voucher system that undercuts public education, therefore undercuts our students, we would be diametrically opposed to. But taking a look at how we finance schools is a great thing to do, as long as the people looking at it represent all sectors of the community and we have broad input and we really take a look and really study what works. Because the way schools are funded now, in Michigan and other places, we place a higher value on a child from a better off community than we do a child from a poor community, and that's flat-out wrong.
I'm talking to David Hecker. He's the president of American Federation of Teachers Michigan. So aren't we moving, though, into more and more of this kind of examination and testing that defines what success is with this Common Core curriculum that 46 states have now signed up for? I guess it takes effect in 2015, this computer adaptive exam.
Right. We first of all, the American Federation of Teachers strongly supported the Common Core curriculum. Strong curriculum is essentially important. And again, there's a role for standardized tests. They shouldn't be high-stakes tests. They shouldn't be the be-all and end-all in judging if a school is doing well or not. They shouldn't be the be-all and end-all to decide if you're going to keep a teacher, a fire teacher, or how much money.
What should be, though? What should be? If it's not the test results, then what really can you point to say this school district is improving?
a real evaluation system takes a look at teacher inputs and student outcomes. And there are many ways to measure student outcomes, in which, again, standardized testing is one measure of doing that. And we have to look at the various student outcomes, because that's why we have public education, to educate our students, obviously. But we have to take a look at different kinds of student outcomes to judge how students are doing and therefore how the school is doing.
And in terms of this panel that's been assembled, so you're saying that the discussion of having the money follow the student and allowing, essentially, my understanding is it allows for an easier mobility of a student to leave a failing school, go to another district, go to a charter, and so on. You're saying that there are no barriers at all right now to doing that?
There are not barriers. Students could go to another school district now, and some do. Obviously, any parents could take their child out of a traditional school district and try to send them to a charter. Of course, charters don't have to take every child that comes through the door, and because they have limited number of seats. And the public school obviously has to, and we want to take every child that comes through the door, no matter how many chairs and desks we have in the building, and that's our obligation, and we love having that obligation. Charters don't have that obligation. But parents right now could move their child into a charter school. They could move their child into a private school. They could move their child to another public school district.
So what do you expect to see happen? What kind of legislation do you expect to see this panel come up with when it comes to the reform that the governor is saying we need at this point?
You know, I think it's far too early to do that. I'll just predict that. I'll just tell you that. I mean, personally, I have a meeting scheduled coming up with them, so I'm looking forward to that and having a rich discussion with them to kick around ideas about how we best fund our public schools. But I'll tell you, it isn't just a matter of, you know, what the formula is or how we allocate the money. It's also an issue of how much money is there to allocate. And, you know, this state cannot continue to put in measures that cut revenue like we recently did and expect to have a system to fund public education that will properly fund the schools. I mean, you know, we don't have a spending problem in Michigan. We have a revenue problem in Michigan. You know, the income tax rate has been slashed. You know, the legislature refuses to extend sales tax to non-essential services, although so much of the economy is that. And they refuse to stand up and do what they're elected to do, and that is to improve our state.
Okay.
And they run away because of re-election from talking about a family paying $25 more a year so we could have better schools, better roads, and more better equipped fire departments and police departments.
Just a minute or so left, but there are those that, many of those that say that they support teachers, the work they do, but they don't support the unions and union leaders, and they say that there's an agenda there that's not always focused on improving education. What would you say in response, and how would teachers be affected, and what kind of benefit and salary range would they be looking at if your union and the NEA did not exist at all?
Well, I would say a couple of things. One, there's no separation between the union and the teachers. The teachers are the union. The union is not David Hecker. The union is not Steve Cook, the president of the NEA. The union are the teachers. It's a democratic organization run by the members of the union. So the teachers are the union. And, you know, that's an important thing. We, you know, the opposition always tries to do what we call third party us. We're very, very democratic institutions, and the members make the decisions and the members move us forward, and the leaders help guide and implement what the membership wants the union to be doing.
Now, in terms of a world without unions, charter schools and the teachers there, are they essentially an example of how things would function without your union and the NEA in place?
Well, there are very few charters organized. We work with teachers, and teachers organized in a charter school in Macomb County with the American Federation of Teachers in December. It's a great group of people, great school. And but overall, you know, teachers don't have a voice. In without a union, teachers don't have a voice. And to have a real meaningful voice that's listened to, you need to act as the collective, and you need to have the a union standing there so management can't just retaliate because they don't like that you spoke up about how education is going in that school, or you spoke up about something the school district is doing that is not good for kids.
On the other hand, the critics will say unions oftentimes keep teachers that may not be performing up to par in place, and they don't allow a school that a charter, for example, wouldn't have to deal with this, but they don't allow a school to get them out.
You say a lot of people say, and you're right, people say, but people say it doesn't make it a fact because it's not a fact. No one wants a bad teacher out of the classroom more than their fellow teachers. I said on the show, I have said that many, many times.
It is incredibly hard to do, though, isn't it, to get a teacher?
No, actually, the legislature just made it just changed the process. Mm-hmm. Really, the criteria, necessary.
Something the union
was
opposed.
If there's a teacher teaching who shouldn't be teaching, and I guarantee you that there are. Any place, as in any occupation, people who really shouldn't be doing that job, if there's someone there like that, and there are, that's management's fault. All management needs to do is follow a process, build up the case, show the evidence, and the teacher is gone.
But that process, look, critics say that process is very convoluted and difficult to actually get that done, and they even point to the evidence, the fact that we see very few teachers actually losing their jobs due to incompetence.
Well, teachers do lose their job, for one, and two, it's management's responsibility. You know, our union a year and a half ago proposed, we studied the tenure system, and we proposed a system that significantly reduced the number of the amount of time it takes to go through that process, and, you know, we didn't get the time of day on that. Management's responsibility to manage, management's responsibility to treat people fairly, management's responsibility to, if there's a teacher not doing the job, based on a proper evaluation, to then help that teacher get better, and if that teacher is still, after the help, not cutting it, it's management's responsibility to ask the teacher to leave, and if they don't leave, to dismiss the teacher.
But you do acknowledge the union's role is to defend the teacher and to, as the process moves along until that point is proved in the most complete way.
The union's responsibility is to make sure that there's due process. The union is not responsible for taking every case that comes forth. If a teacher is dismissed, the union makes the judgment call. Due process has to happen. Everyone, that's what this country is based on, due process. But if the union thinks the teacher really should be dismissed, the union is not going to defend the teacher.
Well, due process in court, but in a typical job, I mean, when someone is not performing up to par, the threshold is much lower to get them out of that position, is it not, as compared to what teachers are facing now?
Well, actually, not anymore, because the legislature passed legislation that tells management, don't worry about doing your job. We'll just make the criteria a lot lower for that you need to meet to dismiss a teacher.
Right, that is something so the union's opposed.
It was lowered considerably from what from just cause, which is a pretty decent concept. You have to prove your case. And that standard was lowered considerably.
That was something the unions opposed very definitively, that change.
Well, we believe in just cause. We believe that people should have to show the evidence and prove their case, not just wake up in the morning and say, you're gone.
You know, we're obviously going to run to the bottom of the hour. So just with another minute or so, if you could, this panel that the governor's put together, you sound like you're not certain that the outcome is going to be one that the union's going to oppose. But isn't your sense of it that ultimately that what this panel is working on is something that the unions are not going to be thrilled about?
I'll make an arrangement with you. I'll comment on that after I sit down and meet with the men and women working on this panel.
Are there any changes?
I could have a rich discussion with them, learn where they're going, kick around ideas, see if they accept my input, and then a old comment. I'd like to make an informed comment.
Let me put it this way. Are there any changes the governor, Governor Snyder and Republicans have made that you are very happy with?
There are a couple of things the governor has done, like the bridge, like the veto of voter suppression laws.
In terms of education, of course.
That we think are good. In terms of education, no, I don't think we support any of the bills. I'm just thinking back that the governor has signed. And, you know, if you want to sort of sum this up and give the one example, that, you know, one of the laws passed says you can no longer have payroll dues deduction of dues, which is negotiated with the employer, and the school board has to ratify that contract, and the members democratically decided they want that, and the school board democratically decided to agree. School management groups told the governor to veto that bill. It's an absurd bill. Eliminating that right does absolutely nothing to educate a child. So when you look at that, just that one example, you could see where the motivation is of the state legislature and the governor. And the motivation is not improving education for our children. The motivation is to undercut teachers and undercut their democratically elected labor organization.
We are out of time. David Hacker, president of the American Federation of Teachers Michigan. David, thank you so much for joining us on WILS.
Thanks for having me. Have a good evening.
Excellent. We will be right back to talk to the director of MSU's new, business analytics program. We'll find out what that is, what it involves, and how are MSU's business grads doing out there. That's next. Michael Cohen, 1320 WILS.